It's 6 minutes past 1 o'clock, and you are listening to Dialogue on 91.9 FM WUOT Knoxville and WUOT HD1 Knoxville. I'm Chrissy Kuiper. Today, a discussion about food equity and health equity, what they are and what they look like here in Tennessee. Our guests today are James Bosey of the Knoxville Knox County Food Policy Council, Martha Buchanan of the Knox County Health Department, Paul Irwin of the UT Department of Public Health. Thank you all very much for being here today.
Thank you.
Would you each just take a minute to introduce yourselves and tell our listeners a little bit about what you do?
Sure. I'm James Bosey. I'm the manager of business development at Cisco Knoxville, and I chair the Knoxville Knox County Food Policy Council, where we work on recommending policy with our local government officials on anything that has to do with food.
Okay. Paul?
Yes, I'm Paul Irwin. I'm the head of the Department of Public Health here at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, where we have public health degree programs both at the master's and at the doctorate level.
All right.
And I'm Martha Buchanan. I'm the director of the Knox County Health Department, where we are really focusing on policy and how it impacts health.
Okay, very succinctly, exactly. And we're going to get to the connection between the Department of Public Health here at UT and the Knox County Health Department here in a bit. James, I want to start with you real quick. How long have you been on the Food Policy Council?
This is my third year on the Food Policy Council. It's 2 3-year terms, so this is the end of my first term.
You work for Cisco Foods, which is one of the world's largest distribution companies for food. How does that job influence your perspective on food policy?
Well, I get to work with food every day, so I get to see a lot of different things. But when I joined the Food Policy Council, it was giving a business perspective to what we see as food in Knoxville. So it helped bring the idea of what the food economy is to our local leaders, as well as being able to discuss costs of when we don't take action, as opposed to when we do.
What does the food economy look like here in Knox County?
The food economy, I think it can be thriving better. We have a lot of folks, our farms, our agriculture, we're in a really rich territory for that. We've got several things that we're trying to do, but I think that our natural resources here are better than most in the country.
Mm-hmm. I was reading a CDC report from, was it CDC? Yeah, I think so. Talking about percentage of farmers markets for states with, you know, high agriculture output. And ours was really low, even though here in East Tennessee, I guess we see quite a few, more farmers markets than we had, you know, just a few years ago. Is that a goal for the policy council?
Well, one of the things that we've started to work on, we just came back from a leadership academy for sustainable communities. A team from Knoxville went with 12 other cities from around the country. And one of the things we brought back was, how do we get the market aspect into the communities that need it the most? Whether that be a mobile market, that we have a group that's working on mobile market, or a mini market, which might be farmers that aren't large enough to go to a large farmer's market. Or we're starting discussion on a food hub that many cities have, which is like a year-round farmer's market with lots of different aspects, community kitchen, commercial kitchen, business incubation for food businesses, and different things attached to that.
Oh, neat. Okay. A food hub. I hadn't heard of that one before. Let's see. Paul, would you talk a little bit about, you helped develop what is really the state's first academic health department. So it's a teaching department on health policy. Is that right?
That's right, to a degree. This is a formal arrangement between our UT Department of Public Health and the Knox County Health Department. The best way to describe it is, imagine a medical center that has a teaching hospital. for medical students who are enrolled in medical school. They're involved in the teaching hospital in a way that is very seamless. Well, the analogy for us is that we have a Department of Public Health where we train public health professionals in the academic setting, but we're have been historically very disconnected from the practice side where public health practitioners actually work and practice public health. So this is an effort to bring back the connections that were there historically and to provide an opportunity for students to apply what they learn in the classroom to the real problems of people and communities by working with the Knox County Health Department. We have students on the ground in the health department as well as in the communities where the health department staff are working. We have faculty in our department who teach courses alongside some of the senior staff at the Knox County Health Department. We have, in turn, members of the Knox County Health Department staff who are adjunct faculty in our department mm-hmm. and bring that practice perspective back to our classroom. And then there's there are opportunities for practice-based research that are important for us in the academic setting and we think are increasingly important for public health practitioners in helping us to strengthen the evidence base of public health practice.
How did that disconnect happen in the first place?
It's a long and murky and painful history in terms of how schools of public health were first organized and developed as entities, first often within medical or other kinds of health professional schools. But there was at the outset a very distinct set of competencies that were thought to be unique to people in the academic setting from those who were in the practice environment. Hmm. And over time, the things that the academy focused on were very different from the real problems that public health practitioners faced. Those gaps grew more and more over the years, and I think it's only been within the last 20 years or so that we've really recognized that that we won't solve large problems that are complex and multifaceted by keeping the academic public health environment distinct and separate from the practice of public health.
Sure. Well, of course, today's show is about health equity and food equity and how they go together, how they're different. But first, let's talk about the definitions of both of these ideas. Martha, can you talk to us about health equity?
Sure, Chrissy. Health equity is really what we mean when we talk about what are the social determinants of health. So what are those things in society that can be addressed that impact health and all kinds of health, all aspects of health. And that's everything from income to education to housing to zip code to food access to healthcare access and how all of those things impact the health of the people that live in that community. And so it's different if you look across Knox County, health equity or health inequity is different in all the different areas of our county where income and education vary. And we can see that. And we see how the connection to food is also there, where when you go to the poorer communities, they tend to be food deserts where you don't have access to grocery stores and fresh fruits and vegetables and have really expensive food. Mm-hmm. So that disconnect there. So you don't have a very good income. You don't have reliable transportation. You've got a shop in your neighborhood. And what's available isn't all that healthy, and it's expensive. So that's kind of what we're talking about.
What's the connection between the Food Policy Council and the Health Department?
Well, the Health Department sits on the Food Policy Council in an advisory capacity, and we provide information. One of the things James talked about was how do we get the food into those neighborhoods where there aren't grocery stores? So, again, we can connect the Department of Public Health and students that did a really cool study a few years ago where they took a grocery list to all the different planning sectors of our community and just priced it out. And that's where we found out that in our most affluent neighborhoods, groceries cost less than they do in our poorest neighborhoods. So then they can use that information to say, okay, where are the places we need to get this affordable food and get the access? So that's one of the roles we play with the Food Policy Council.
Question for both of you then, especially in light of something like different prices at grocery stores, besides instituting something local, like farmers markets, is there a way to change how those retail establishments do their business in certain areas of town?
A lot of it isn't different prices at grocery stores. It might be that the only place they have to shop is a corner store or a convenience store.
Right. Where prices tend to be higher.
Where prices tend to be higher, and their selection is minimal, where that's the only place they have to shop. And, you know, if I have $5, there's no fresh fruit or vegetable for me to buy. It's chips or something that's not very nutritional for them.
So there's really nothing that can be done as far as that, like the private businesses and their price points.
Actually, there are things that can be done. There are things that have been done in other communities. We just haven't gone that direction locally to make those changes. But there can be policies put in place and subsidies provided to encourage grocery stores to put themselves in local communities, and also other things that can happen. Those have just not happened here in Knox County. They have happened in other places in the country, but not locally. Paul might be able to speak to some examples, but I know there are policies and things that can happen to encourage grocers that would carry fresh fruits and vegetables to locate in a community where there's a food desert.
A couple of places that I think have made major inroads in terms of health equity and related directly to food equity include the Bay Area around San Francisco. There's a Bay Area Regional Health Inequities Initiative that goes by the acronym BARHI, which involves multiple health departments and other organizations that come together to create policy and policy change for addressing these kinds of issues, and now they've been able to really affect laws and regulations that have to do with food and food distribution. So that's one just brief example. There are certainly other examples where county health departments across the country are involved in issues not only on food equity specifically, but in health equity more generally.
Mm-hmm. Let's open up the phone lines. The number is 974-5050 if you have a question or a comment. Our guests today are James Bosie of the Knox County Food Policy Council, Martha Buchanan of the Knox County Health Department, and Paul Irwin of the University of Tennessee's Department of Public Health. Again, the number is 974-5050. James, you said you'd been at Cisco for a few years?
Yeah, this is 14 years.
14 years, okay. You've been on the Food Policy Council for 3. There's, you know, for the last several years, there's been a big movement nationwide to lower calorie counts on foods that are, you know, wholesale foods especially, to push more nutritious foods. Has that movement affected a company like Cisco?
What I get to do every day in my role is to talk and help develop menus with different chefs as we talk through what they do. And the trends that are out there are definitely what people are looking for. You know, 10 years ago it was larger sizes and all of the things that are out there. Now it's small plates, it's locally grown, it's nutritious ideas, new salads. So we're an ingredient company that is what we bring to the restaurant. So it doesn't really change. The conversation has changed over the last 10 years in the restaurant industry as you talk to chefs and restaurant owners.
Does the business practice change? I mean, do they have more connections with local businesses that grow their own produce, or how has that changed?
Some do. We did at Cisco, we did a local growers workshop in February to try to talk about GAP certification for local farmers, which is good agricultural practices, which is basically food safety from the farm. on how they can follow those to make sure that the supply chain is good for the produce that goes into the restaurants. So it's really about, in Knoxville at least, the discussion is on local food, and the demand is there. It's trying to get all of the suppliers together. So I think the demand is actually bigger than the supply that we have of our local products at the moment.
Numbers 974-5050 if you have a question or a comment. Paul, let's go back to the academic health department here at UT. As you said earlier, there's been sort of a disconnect until recently in education and practice. Are there issues that, especially that have to do with access to healthcare, that are being addressed now that were not addressed before in teaching about public health?
Well, I think first and foremost is the opportunity for our students and our faculty to work with the Knox County Health Department to identify areas where access is problematic. One of the conditions, as Dr. Buchanan was mentioning, that impact health equity and cause health inequities. So certainly identifying areas where there's lower access is an important piece that we can add to the discussion. That certainly involves the skill sets that we teach in the academic setting, including the skill sciences of epidemiology and biostatistics, but also in then being able to take data, to take information, and to make it applicable so that those areas of low access can be identified and can be understood in ways that are meaningful.
Martha, you looked like you wanted to say something.
One thing that comes to mind for me is around access to healthcare. We recently partnered with UT Department of Public Health through our academic health department to look at issues around no-show rates in our family planning clinic. So we have a pretty high no-show rate in that clinic. And as you can imagine, anybody who runs a business and you have scheduled appointments, if people don't show up, it's not efficient. It's not a good use of time. And then somebody else doesn't have the opportunity to be there. So it impacts access for other people. So without having the academic health department and their staff and the expertise they bring, my staff, we've been scratching our heads about that for years and not being able to solve the problem. We've tried things and done things and haven't really seemed to be able to get on top of it. But with their help and their expertise and manpower, they brought that with my staff and were able to do some interviews, and we'll be continuing to look at that and hopefully be able to come up with a solution that helps improves access for the patients, but also makes better use of the taxpayers' dollars when my staff is there working and there to see patients. So it's a great marriage, a win-win for both of us.
Yeah, and I would add, it again comes back around to the issues of health inequities, because some of the reasons that are being identified early on in this research project for women missing appointments have to do with employment, their employment situation, lack of paid sick leave, and inability to be flexible in their work schedules, issues of transportation, and all of those are part of those so-called social determinants of health that impact a person's potential for health.
Mm-hmm. The number is 974-5050, 974-5050. We're going to take a real quick break here on Dialogue. You are listening to Dialogue here on WUOT, Knoxville, 91.9 FM.
This week on Studio 865, a very special one-hour visit from Christina Horn. She'll talk about her favorite instrumental music, including things from the classical and electronic worlds. Also, she'll tell us how to pronounce the name of her new fabulous record. I'm your host, Todd Steed. Join us Wednesday night at 8 for Studio 865, a co-production between UT TV Comcast Channel 194 and WUOT.
You are listening to Dialogue on WUOT Knoxville 91.9 FM. I'm Chrissy Kuiper with James Bosey of the Knoxville Knox County Food Policy Council, Martha Buchanan of the Knox County Health Department, and Paul Irwin of UT's Department of Public Health. The number is 974-5050 if you have a question or a comment. James, during the break, we got into a very short conversation about the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. What were you saying about that?
Well, we talked a little bit a few minutes ago about projects that students have worked on and done in the past. And right now, what we have a group of students on from the Department of Health at UT is working on SNAP dollars in our community and where they're spent and then what those stores actually sell. So that's going to give us the data back to try to figure out equity issues, access issues, and it's kind of tailored after a study that was done in Chicago and Detroit that we came across in March at our Eat, Play, Live conference. So it's I can't wait for it to come back at the end of the semester and just kind of see what it looks like on where those dollars are being spent in our community.
Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a study done like this before in the area?
Not to my knowledge. So you'll be looking at where those dollars are being spent and also what's available in those places that take SNAP and where the moms who and dads who go and use that money to buy food, what they're buying and actually more about what's available and where it's going, because some of the studies across the country have shown that where those SNAP dollars are going really is not the place where you find healthy foods.
Sure.
And so you're finding high sugar foods and more processed foods. And so looking at that and having that data to go back and make decisions and policies or recommendations for policies on where those monies can go and where people can get healthier foods.
Sure. I assume that will be influenced somewhat by the fact that now more farmers markets are involved with SNAP and take food stamps than did before.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be, yeah.
Yeah. The number is 974-5050 if you have a question or comment. We did have a question from Jerry of Knoxville. What is Knoxville's participation in food equity on the east side? So what does food availability look like on the east side of Knoxville? Can any of you speak to that?
Well, we on the Food Policy Council on the east side actually have Rick Roach as one of our neighborhood I don't know if you would call him an activist, but a participant. He sits as an associate member of the Food Policy Council. There are probably more food deserts in the east side of Knoxville than most. So a lot of the discussion that we have on where the mobile market can travel, mini markets and different things that come up, the east side of Knoxville would be where we would be looking at those.
Yeah, I agree. We are looking at all of those areas and correctly. That's where we have a concentration of food deserts, and we'll be looking at how we can meet the needs of that community in a different way so that they can have access to healthy, affordable foods.
Right.
And that's one example, again, of the academic health department in action, that in the spring we had students from a community health problem-solving course work alongside Knox County Health Department staff in the Five Points community and working with community residents to do a community health assessment project there. And again, it was an opportunity for students to not only be involved with data, but also to be there on the ground and to be able to hear and see and feel the perspectives of the community residents themselves.
We have David on the line. David, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Well, just a quick question and request to the panel today. As we've been speaking, with the exception of the SNAP program a moment ago, you keep speaking in general terms. You know, there are things that can be done. There are areas that need improvement. As we move along with this dialogue today, I would ask you to get very specific about that. I think Knoxville's a mature community, and we can handle hearing where improvements really need to be made without getting under our skin too much.
Thank you for that, David. And we appreciate, and we will get specific, promise. Thanks.
All right. Well, let's do it. James, what can we do?
Well, there's a few things. I think when SNAP funding always seems to be getting cut, and I think when we talk to our policymakers, it's not about, when we talk about food and health equity, it's not about the cost of what the SNAP dollars are. It's the cost that we're going to incur when we reduce those SNAP dollars, of what happens to the health of our community when they don't have their access to food because they can't afford it. Right. And a lot of the SNAP dollar increases, you know, our food inflation has gone up tremendously over the last several years. So food just costs more where it is. So initially that's gonna cost more. But we've just got to figure out the way to get healthy food in front of folks, and really to educate them about not everyone knows what to do if they have fresh vegetables and how to prepare them. And we've got several groups in the community that are working on that education piece with cooking classes, but I think that's going to become more and more prevalent to teach them exactly what to do when they get it.
Right. A few years ago, I interviewed John Dickel, who does nutrition for the Knox County Schools, and he had talked about how they were introducing fruits to a lot of kids who'd never seen these fruits before, ever, in their lives, didn't know what a kiwi fruit was. What other avenues for education are there through the health department or through the Food Policy Council? What sort of policies can be put in place to make sure that people know how to use the food that they get?
I think they're doing a really good job in our community schools that are in, and I know in the Lonsdale Community School, especially on having some of those discussions of how to prepare food. And it's really, it's just important. We hosted A Place at the Table, which is a documentary, I guess 2 weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. And it was eye-opening from the responses from the crowd on what hunger looks like in America today. It's not the emaciated child that you see on the television. It's folks that are eating the empty calories, and that's all they're getting.
Right. Employed people.
Mm-hmm.
Middle-class people. People you wouldn't expect to be, receive not enough nutrients. Martha, what about through the health department? What sort of education avenues
Well, we certainly have lots of different education programs out there. One in particular around employed people, and we have a wellness roundtable, which is made up of local employers to provide them with information about how they can offer healthy foods to their employees, what that might look like. We also have information on how they can make exercise accessible during the workday. But one of the things I think that's kind of note is that we are Knoxville kind of in the beginning of looking at equity and food and policy. The Community Health Council, which is a was just created through ordinance in the last year, also it has an initiative called Together Healthy Knox. One branch of Together Healthy Knox is focusing on health equity, which will include food as well. But we're just now implementing those plans. And part of implementing those plans means going to those people who either lack access to food or have health issues and saying, how can we help you change your health and change your access? What is it you need? And we haven't really done that before. We've come in and said, we're going to put a grocery store here and that's going to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't.
Right.
And we've done it with other things as well, not just with grocery stores. But we're really taking a different approach. And it's the long, long look. It's really working with the communities, really collaborating, and really solving the problem with their input, not with just what we think is going to work, because we have the knowledge and we have the data. So it is a long look, and it's going to take a while to do some of those things. I would love to say, yeah, we're at the end and we've got the answers and we have this plan that the community's helped us develop and we're going to put it in place, but we're not quite there yet. Honestly. I know the Food Policy Council just came out with some recommendations around food, and they just presented those to County Commission. So we're at the beginning of saying to our policymakers, here's some input we have, here's what we recommend that you do, and then hoping that they'll do those things.
And those recommendations came, like Dr. Buchanan said, from neighborhood meetings. We had two, one on food access. So it was folks that really felt passionate about having access to healthy food in their communities. And the other side was on Farm to Fork, which was farmers and food producers that wanted to figure out ways to get their products to market. So it wasn't, here's what we think is going to work for you. It's what do you need in your neighborhoods, and let's figure out a way together as a group that we can make it work.
Are community gardens among the recommendations there?
Community gardens are among the recommendations. That was part of the Leadership Academy that we went to, and probably one of the most the better things that I liked about it was having everybody at the table. So our team from Knoxville was the health department, the Office of Sustainability from the city, the Metropolitan Planning Commission, the law department, and then the Food Policy Council. So when we talked about, you know, how do we get the community garden ordinance to really work, it was all the departments that have to write the zoning and the rules and the liability, all of those at the same table saying, well, if it was this way or if it was this way. And I think that's what we've missed over the last couple of years is something goes to one spot and they say no, but it's just getting a collaboration of everybody around the same table.
Sure. Yeah, making it more efficient altogether.
And again, one example of what James is, I think, referring to as well that connects food equity to one of the other social determinants of health is transportation. Mm-hmm. If there aren't sidewalks or places to walk where people can go to and from a farmer's market, access is an issue. And yet we somehow don't really think of transportation in that way. There are zoning and other ordinances that have to do with sidewalk regulations. And having an impact on those kinds of policies can directly impact access to healthy foods, which in turn can reduce health inequities.
What is the temperature so far of people in power here in our area as far as something like sidewalks?
Well, the Complete Streets program is part of our recommendation for us to discuss, as well as public transit. So for me, it was enlightening, and I don't have his name in front of me, but when I presented to County Commission last week, a board member from Knoxville Transit Authority said, can I come to the next Policy Council meeting because I'd like to start this discussion. I think that's an awesome step. When Mark Donaldson was with us and we started talking about complete streets and where we're going to go as food access talk continues, it was great as he got to as the zoning guy from the MPC to hear the other cities and things that they've dealt with and what worked and what didn't work. So it was a really good collaboration to go through. So I think that the temperature is great. We have both mayors that are all about food and healthy food, and I think it's just I think it's all moving in the right direction.
We have Jack online. Jack, are you still with us?
I am.
Thank you very much for holding on. What's your question?
Well, it's a comment, actually. I live in Nashville, and the food desert problem is also quite substantial over there. And I've recently been doing some research, strangely enough, into fluoride as kind of a serendipitous situation. And one of the interesting things that's in the research is that environmental toxin like fluoride has a much greater effect on an area where there's poor nutrition than it would, say, in a wealthy community where proper nutrition kind of offsets some of the costs of, for example, having fluoride in water from a health perspective. And I didn't know any of this until a couple of months ago, but apparently fluoride is a neurotoxin, an endocrine disruptor, and a carcinogen, and as a result of which can have a substantial health impact on neurological development in children. And this research comes out of Harvard, so this is not actually a Harvard-affiliated institute, I should say. So it's not, you know, just some health activist per se. And I was just curious if anybody here in Knoxville is aware of this, as I've started talking to people in the community in Nashville relative to children's health specifically on this particular topic.
Well, thanks for the call, Jack, and we will address that right now. Thanks a lot. Either one of you want
to? Well, I'd have to say I'm not
that
familiar with the research that he cited, so I really would be hesitant to comment just because I'm not familiar with the particular thing that he cited and not familiar with the connections of fluoride and neurodevelopment.
Paul?
Well, in proper amounts or in improper amounts, I should say, there are many things that can be environmental toxins, but in the right amounts and the right doses, those things are, provide health protection, and fluoride is one of those examples.
Okay. Bill is on the line. Bill, thanks for hanging on. Are you still there?
I am.
Thank you very much. What's your question?
I have been talking to friends both from South America and from Europe who have visited Knoxville and come down to the market on Market Square and seen the market that happens down at Cherokee Boulevard and Kingston Pike. And they are always very surprised that shopping at a farmer's market is much more expensive than shopping in a grocery store. And I wonder if that is particular to Knoxville. Is that common in the United States, or are my friends just from places where there are many, many more farmers than there are commercial grocers?
Right. That's a good question. Thanks for the call, Bill.
Sure.
Anybody want to take that one?
My guess would be that they're from a place where there are more farmers than commercial grocers. Depending on what you buy at a farmer's market, which I do frequently, this year a little less because we got a CSA to bring us ours every week. But depending on what you buy, I don't think that it's that much of a different expense. If you buy the heirloom tomatoes and the fancy things that are going to come in and it's a smaller crop than a bigger one, they're going to be more expensive, but a regular tomato, potato, onion, I think they're fairly competitive.
And in addition to that, the money that you put into a farmer's market or local produce puts more money back into the local economy versus when you buy at a large retail grocer. A lot of that money leaves the region, so it doesn't stay here locally. And so, you know, if you think about where your dollars are going, more of your money stays in the region if you buy locally. So that's a benefit to the region as a whole.
Well, we have about 10 minutes left. And, of course, you know, we need to address a couple of things. We've already talked about the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the SNAP program, which is still up for debate in Congress, a possible $40 billion cut to that program. And, of course, yesterday, the major part of the Affordable Care Act went online with the insurance marketplace. Both of those programs have been called equalizers as far as access to food and to health care. So I would really like to get your view on especially how the Affordable Care Act is going to affect the health department and health access, you know, here in East Tennessee.
So, yeah, the Affordable Care Act, really, I mean, as far as being an equalizer, it certainly is. I mean, if you are making a low wage and haven't been able to afford your health care premium, and had to go without insurance, you're now going to be able to have an affordable premium and get a tax credit for that, so that then your family and yourself can have access to health care. As far as how it will impact the health department, one of the things that we'll see is a very practical thing, is that preventive care will be covered at 100%. So from the business side of the health department, that may look like more people coming to us to get vaccinated, and that's great. More people vaccinated, we're all for that. But more preventive care that's being covered at 100% is going to increase everybody's access and accessing preventive care, which we know prevention is a great way to reduce disease burden in our community. And so we certainly support that. And hopefully what we'll see also is maybe, you know, more people seeking family planning services or vaccination services through the health department. And so that'll be part of the impact on the health department. It might change our role in how we help people get access to health care. Now there are a few programs available for folks who don't have insurance. Now with the Affordable Care Act and the marketplace opening up, there's more access to those for folks who don't have insurance to as a way to get health insurance. And we might change our role, and we're looking at that and working with other area providers like Knox Area Project Access to see how we can fit in and support what they're doing to help increase access to health insurance for anybody in Knox County.
Are you all prepared to deal with maybe an influx of people who are looking for more care?
Well, actually, no, we're not, because at this time we've been unable to become what's called a certified application counselor organization because of some legal logistical issues around being able to do that. So right now we're really just supporting, and the navigators are just kind of rolling out and starting. So kind of taking a slow start, working out some of the kinks, and then we'll see how we fit into that.
Okay. Paul?
Well, to simply add to some of Dr. Buchanan's comments, one of the I think major, certainly, let me back up just a minute. You know, one of the major drivers of health inequities in East Tennessee is income and other forms of wealth. And so when you're able to expand health insurance in accessible and affordable ways, that alone can become a major equalizer, particularly with the prohibition against the no pre-existing conditions piece to this. So someone who hasn't had health insurance, particularly if they're low income already, probably has a higher chance of already having a major illness.
Right.
Being able to get access to affordable health insurance with that pre-existing condition is an enormous step forward. A couple of other things that the Affordable Care Act provides. Number one is the expansion of community health centers, which are centers that often are located and target low-income and minority populations. And again, as Dr. Buchanan mentioned, the focus on prevention and primary prevention, all of the things that can be done to prevent illness from ever happening in the first place.
A huge act like this that is going to encompass so many people and healthcare, how does that influence public policy as far as public health policy, teaching students who are going to be out there in the healthcare field and in administrative positions especially?
Well, first and foremost is simply that students have to get their heads around just what the Affordable Care Act is and what it isn't. And that's an important piece of the academic program and what we can do in the classroom. Secondly, the students, particularly in our health policy and management track, have an opportunity to do field placement internships, and so be able to take what they're learning in the classroom that impacts the provision of health and health care in places like the Cherokee Health System offices or in Summit Medical Group or in one of the local hospitals. And so to learn firsthand exactly what these changes mean to individuals and to groups of people.
Mm-hmm. We discussed the SNAP program a little earlier in the show, and you all mentioned the report that the data collection that's going on with the Department of Health. When is that due out? Any idea?
At the end of the semester. I mean, they're working on it for the semester, so I would assume that we would get it in December, January.
Okay. Looking forward to that. Let's take one more call. We have Hubert on the line. Hubert, are you there?
Hey, Chrissy. How you doing?
Hey, Hubert. What's going on?
And to Martha Buchanan and all. Listen, I heard James reference the KTA board member. That would be me. and so I just want to say, yes, I plan on being at your meeting. You invited me to come to your Food Policy Council meeting on the 9th. But my question is, James, what should I expect? What goes on at a Food Policy Council meeting? And I'll just hang up and listen.
Thank you, Hubert. Okay.
We're finishing putting together the agenda right now from the members. What we're going to discuss this Wednesday will be off the top of my head. I can go to a few, but after presenting the recommendations to County Commission, where we go from there, our quarterly meetings that we're going to have with the neighborhood access folks and the farmers, getting those set up. And then we've got a business model from Seattle on the Food Hub, and we're going to start going over that and kind of looking at what that looks like to see where we are. We've also got the local food guide is in the process of being worked by Nourish Knoxville as part of the Plan East Tennessee project that's coming to an end. So we'll get updated on that. And Chad Hellwinkle, I believe, is going to update us on kind of a food assessment that he's done for the food shed for our 5-county region. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, off the top of my head, kind of the agenda for Wednesday's meeting, but I probably left something out.
Well, the big picture that I'm taking away from this whole discussion is that things are happening. I mean, things are happening here in East Tennessee and around the country, obviously. But here, I mean, things have changed a lot as far as, you know, just the transportation changes that have happened around the city, the farmers markets, the you know, the health department, access to the health department, and now the Affordable Care Act. What improvements have you all seen in your places, in, you know, on the Food Policy Council and in the health department and the Department of Public Health? What changes have you seen just from where you stand that you think are impressive?
Well, from the health department standpoint, what I think is really impressive is that we now have a formal body, the Community Health Council, which will, after I'm no longer here, after Paul's no longer involved, will continue to move forward with being strategic about how we address health, not just in the walls of the health department, not just in our hospitals, but in our entire community. So that collaboration, having all those people at the table to be heard and provide their input, that's a huge shift, and it was a necessary shift, and I'm excited about it.
Paul?
For us in the Department of Public Health, I think one of the changes that has taken place over the last few years is the growth in multidisciplinary connections across campus. So, for example, in recognizing that public health is multidisciplinary by nature, that's really important for us. We have longstanding connections with the College of Veterinary Medicine and the Public Health Nutrition Program, but more recently we've been able to partner with the College of Nursing in having a graduate certificate in health policy. Just this fall with the College of Law and having the first JD MPH, Master in Public Health, dual degree program in the state. And we're working this fall with partners down on the Ag campus, the Institute of Agriculture, to build a certificate in food safety. So again, reaching across disciplines, we think provide students with really great opportunities to expand their thinking and learning about public health.
In the Food Policy Council, I think it's raised awareness, but also conversation. We have two great members from County Commission and City Council with Mark Campen and Amy Broyles, who are very involved with us as we discuss. But it also is changed the perspective of, instead of looking at problems and putting out a report, it's changed the perspective of, okay, we have that information now. How do we put it into action and get something done and change the problems that we may face? And I think that's been a great switch over the last few years.
An evolution, it sounds like. That's good. One more question that we had from a caller earlier on just a basic center, you know, central hub for information about balanced diet and nutrition.
I don't have that in off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
Okay.
One of my staff members. Certainly there are resources. There's probably a link on our website. If you go to the Knox County Health Department website, I'm sure there's a link there for good basic nutrition, and I'm sorry that I can't remember what it is off the top of my head.
James, any last words on that one?
I don't think I have that information off the top of my head either.
Any last words from any of you before we end up? Places, sources for our listeners on any information?
If you want to look at the Knoxville, Knox County Food Policy Council, we're www.knoxfood.org. We have open meetings the second Wednesday of every month that are housed at the Knox County Health Department for us.
Yes, Paul.
And if people want to learn more about what it means when we use the term social determinants of health and how this impacts health equity, I would encourage them to go in their internet browser and look for Unnatural Causes. Is Inequality Making Us Sick? This is a documentary film series that PBS put out a few years ago.
Okay. We have definitely run out of time today on Dialogue, but I really want to thank all of you for being here today. James Bosey of the Knoxville and Knox County Food Policy Council, Martha Buchanan of the Knox County Health Department, and Paul Irwin of the UT Department of Public Health.